People sometimes ask me if I became the Ron Van Dam Show announcer because I love what Ron does and I love his comedy. Well, no. It's because Ron broke me out of a Tijuana prison back in 82 and smuggled me across the border in a suitcase in the trunk of a Yugo. And I still owe him for that. Muchas gracias, mi amigo. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
What's up, Padre?
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess which one I am? No. No, no, no. Let's play a little game. Okay, let's play 20 questions. I'm thinking of an object. You have to guess what it is. Okay, what's your first question? Yeah, yeah, you're right. That's what it is. Man, how did you get that so quickly? Hey, just between you and me, are you wearing pants right now?
Me neither.
Is it neither or neither? Eh, let's call the whole thing off. How you doing? How you feeling? You feeling all right? I know, I know. I have allergies too. We all have allergies. It's not just you, it's everybody with you. Yeah, I'm allergic to everything. I'm allergic to people. So this is working out really well for me. He said knowingly. You know, I don't understand this thing, this big social experiment that we're going through. We're supposed to feel like we're all together in this, and I'm supposed to be loving everybody. It's having the opposite effect. I'm starting to think that all human beings are douchebags, and it proves itself every day, so this isn't working out. Here's a big problem, because I don't get out much now. I think I have a sexual attraction toward Alexa. And that's not healthy, because there's no such person. But yet, when she speaks, I feel a little something in my body. Is that wrong? She also tells me when my packages are arriving from Amazon, and that's a turn on. I can't imagine working at Amazon right now. That place must be super busy. I don't even think you have time to go to the bathroom. Can you imagine that? Tell me if you do this. I we're exposing ourselves here with our personalities. It's just you and me, so I think we can do this. I used to have a boring job. I worked in Long Island City, which is right outside of Manhattan. And yeah, it's like part of Queens, New York. And I was a distribution manager for a electronic supply company. Boring. And I was in charge of the warehouse and the warehouse employees. And it was called the Recaton Corporation. I don't even know if they're still in business. They used to make cheap headphones and electronic parts and things. And it was just so boring. Radio Shack was one of their biggest customers that they shipped to. So It's just so boring. Someone as creative and vibrant as me working as a distribution warehouse manager, get out. This is when I was really young before I was really had a decent job. But that was a pretty decent job. But here's what I would do. Every hour, like clockwork, I would go to the bathroom, whether I had to go to the bathroom or not. And I was considered somewhat of an executive because I was a manager, quote unquote, manager. So we had an executive bathroom. There were a few of them. And on the hour, just to get away from all this crap, I would go to the bathroom, lock the door, because it was just like a one-room bathroom, you know, it was your private little bathroom. And I would just sit there on the toilet and read the paper or something, or just chill out or take a little nap. And I'd just sit on the in the bathroom on the toilet. And it was my escape. And without that, it was a nice bathroom too. Executive bathrooms, they have wallpaper. And there was a beautiful sink and the toilet was always clean and sparkly. And oh, it was just a wonderful room. I used to sit on the toilet and make believe I lived there. Like I'll put the TV right over the sink. I could put a refrigerator right next to the toilet here. If I laid down on the floor, I could fall asleep in the corner, prop my head up against the wall near the plumbing. I had it all figured out, but that was my oasis. And looking back at it now, as I'm older and past that stupid job experience, what a pitiful life that was. Oh my God, the only way to pay the bills and have a roof over my head and put food in my mouth. Did I get that right? Put a roof in my mouth and have food over my head. I'm messing it up. The only way to do that was to have this pitiful job where I had to escape it on the hour just to keep my sanity. What kind of life was that? Was that fulfilling? No. And I was dating this girl who was like pain in the ass. I don't remember exactly why. I just remember it was horrible. She would come over to my apartment and we'd sit and talk. And as soon as she walked in, my immediate thought in my head was, when are you going to leave? It was odd. Like, I want you to come over. Come on over. Come on over. And then she would get to my apartment and be, oh, now leave. It was like, wow, what kind of relationship? What a horrible time of life that was. Oh, my God. I don't even know why I'm talking about this. I don't know. How you doing, by the way? How you feeling? Again, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I am the only talk show host doing this. That's not the end of the sentence. I am the only talk show host doing this who really cares about you, who asks on almost every show, how are you doing? I actually ask that of you. And if you respond, I can't hear you. That's not the point. It sounds like I care. I don't care, but it sounds like I do. And perception is 99% of the law. I'm watching television yesterday, and there's a court show that comes out of Rhode Island, and it's called Caught in Providence, and there's this really nice judge. And it's like Judge Judy, only the judge is nice. Judge Judy, man, what a bitch. Oh, my God. Entertaining. But what a bitch. Oh, God. Ugh. She insults people. She's a judge, and she just has her way with people and knocks them down and strips them apart and tells them to shut up. Oh, my God. Well, this guy caught in Providence, this Judge Caprio, he's the opposite. He's just like really nice. He dismisses every case that comes before him. It's like a traffic court kind of thing. But here's the point. Apparently in Rhode Island, you can make a right turn on red, And you don't even have to really slow down if there's no sign telling you to stop first. You can just make a right turn anywhere without even looking. And it's like, whoa, I don't want to go to Providence. It's just, that's like a traffic accident waiting to happen. Holy gosh. People are so, aren't they stupid? People are so stupid. They really are. Not you or your family. And certainly not your mother. But basically, aren't people like really incredibly stupid? I mean, it's not even that they're not smart. It's just that they're incredibly stupid. They can't put two and two together. They can't figure that out. They don't look where they're going. They just, I'm sorry. Oh, my bad. Your bad is not, just saying you're bad is not enough. It's not your bad, it's your stupid. If you do anything during this social experiment, shut-in period of time, work on your stupidity, please. Not you. Again, not you, the person behind you. We all know stupid people. I mean, like, really, like, when they talk, it's not that they're uneducated. Stupidity has nothing to do with education, by the way. Nothing. Nothing at all. I talked about this before. I know I did. I talked about everything before. You can't do this show every weekday for 30 years and not have talked about something before. Because nothing's new. But I've talked about this, man. Stupid has nothing to do with education. It has nothing to do with education. If you don't know what the capital of Louisiana is, I don't care. I don't care what the capital is. I guess if I lived in Louisiana, it might be good to know. But if I don't, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't. The square root of 144, I think I know what it is, but who cares? You know, I don't care what you learned in school. That doesn't, like, oh, he doesn't know where the Baltic Sea is. All right, you know, maybe you're uneducated in that field, but you're not stupid. Here's what stupid is. Day-to-day life stuff that you never figured out, that was in your face 24 hours a day for decades, and you still don't know what the hell's going on. That's stupid. That's stupid. And every once in a while, we say to ourselves, oh, I can't believe I did that. That was a stupid thing to do. Yeah, but at least you're learning from your stupidity. Stupid is not being street smart. You got to be street. I don't care how much is in your brain education-wise. If you're not street smart, if you're not life smart, that's where your stupidity lies. You know, I watch Jeopardy sometimes because I watch these incredibly smart, educated people. But they can still be stupid. You can still be smarter than they are. They're just educated. They retain information is what they do. And to me, that's not the definition of smart. If you have a good memory and you learn stuff out of a book or whatever, then, you know, good for you, entertaining, have a nice day. But you can still do stupid stuff. You can know the capital of every country, the square root of every number. You can know all the books that Dickens wrote. I think there were two. There was Hi, I'm Dickens, and Welcome to My Dickens. There are a lot of book smart things you can know. But if you walk into a kitchen and you touch a hot frying pan, you're still stupid. I don't care how much knowledge you have from a classroom. If you touch a hot frying pan, you're stupid. Because apparently you can retain facts and figures, but you can't put two and two together, literally. So feel good about yourself, man. Yeah, feel good about yourself. When you watch Jeopardy, say, well, at least I'm not smart like that. Who wants that? Mary Lou Henner, do you know who she is? No, you don't. Do you even? Never mind. Mary Lou Henner was an actress. She was on a show called Taxi. Millennials, a taxi is something that you get into. It's not an Uber. It's an actual, like, companies run. Never mind. So she was on the show called Taxi. It turns out this Mary Lou Henner, this actress, she has a condition, but it's not a negative condition. She's wired really strange to the point where she remembers everything that happened in her life And I mean everything. She's an amazing, she's just an actress. That's all. She's just an actress. But she's got this ability to remember every freaking thing. And here's an example of what if Marilu Henner was right here, I'd say, Marilu, back in 1983, on January 7th, what did you have for dinner? And she would actually answer a tuna fish casserole. This is not a joke. She actually remembers everything. And I'm thinking, first of all, how is that even possible? Is this like a magic trick? No. Are you Kreskin? Millennials, again, you don't know what that is. She retains daily information, and it never leaves her freaking body. I don't know what, they should open up her brain and just study this thing. But then I'm saying to myself, okay, that's incredibly impressive. Like, what did you do October 7th, 1992? I went to the hardware store and I bought some light bulbs. You remember that? Yes, I do. I was wearing a pink dress. Oh my God, you stupid. What are you, a witch? I don't want that quality. I don't want to know those. I want to forget them. Can you imagine remembering everything? What a horrible, horrible death sentence that would be. I don't want to remember everything. I want to forget a lot of stuff. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could just remember the good things and all the bad things? You don't even recall them. I remember my birthday back in 1989. I remember my birthday was great. My friends came over. We had a great time. Wouldn't that be wonderful to remember that? And then forget all the stuff that caused you pain? You know, your mother died in 2002. She did? I didn't know she died. Wouldn't it be great not to remember that stuff? That was a horrific time. I lost a parent. I'll never forget it. Ooh, you should hope that you do. The horror, remember, do you remember your first love? And do you remember, did you marry the first person that you loved? You did? Ugh. That's a problem. You can't learn from your first relationship. You need to have quite a few of them, like 70,000 of them, before you really can settle down. Settle down. Settle down, Ron. Stop dating people and going and having sex, but just settle down. What an odd phrase. I got married last year. It's good to hear that you settled down. what an insult. All right, settle down now. All right, kids, now settle down. No, you have to have quite a few relationships to figure out how that works. Those things are complicated, man. Those things don't work out unless you're really... I hear this phrase all the time, you know, you have to work hard at a marriage for it to succeed. You have to work really hard. In a relationship, you got to work hard. Oh my God. No, I don't want to work hard for a relationship. I want that to come naturally. I want that to come easy. I don't have to work at that. You better work on your relationship. You better work on your marriage. Work on it. What do we get a hammer and a screwdriver? What do you want me to, what do you mean work on it? Work on it. No, it's supposed to just happen. You know, you're supposed to, this connection, you've got to find the connection that you had with your mate. You know, work on it. Hey, babe, it's 7 o'clock. Let's sit down at the table. We got to work on this relationship. All right, I'll get the toolbox. Unbelievable. I'll get the toolbox. What, are you going to dress up like a carpenter tonight? Sexy, kinky, sexy. Role playing. That's interesting. Do you ever role play? Some people do. It's interesting. Sounds like fun sometimes. Only it takes two to do that. When you want to role play sexually, it can be fun. It takes you out of your present existence and puts you somewhere else. The only problem with role playing is you can't do it by yourself. You can't walk around like King Arthur and go to Walmart. They'll arrest you. Your mate has to want to role play too. And sometimes that doesn't work out. Hey, you know what? Let's role play tonight. I'll dress up like a doctor. You dress up like a nurse.
What are you, crazy? You're disgusting. What? That's like, you're perverted.
Okay, this isn't going to work with you, apparently. Yeah, it takes two to tango. That's an odd expression. Well, you can't tango by yourself. Well, I guess you could tango by yourself. I think they came up with that phrase before modern, the dancing that we do, the twerking and spurking and flirking, where you get on a dance floor and you don't touch the other person. You just like gyrate your body in a sexual motion. And that's called dancing. There was a time, you know, kids, where dancing meant that you were a couple. You would go on the dance floor, you would embrace each other, and you would dance, and that would be like the tango, and takes two to tango. It kind of doesn't. You can really stand on the dance floor by yourself and gyrate your body in a tango motion, and it's perfectly fine. I've told you before, I used to be a wedding videographer. I did that for decades, and it was a good job at the time until I got sick of it. But I enjoyed it, and apparently I did it real well because it kept getting hired like crazy to the point where I couldn't handle it. But one of the things that I noticed was at the reception at weddings, women get up on the dance floor, and they gyrate. When women dance, they are doing sexy moves. They're fondling their own bodies. They're taking their ass and waving it around. They're moving in a very sexual manner. Women dancing, they strut around, and it's like physical sex teasing. And this is at a public wedding, you know. But this is the way women dance for the most part. Men, on the other hand, when they dance, they look like they have rashes. They really do. Like, I'm so uncomfortable. These underpants are riding too high. And that's what they look like when they dance. When men move around a dance floor sexually, it looks kind of odd unless you're an incredibly attractive person. Women, it doesn't matter what you look like. Somehow you're able to dance real well. God created women to dance on a dance floor because they all do it. Men, sit down and shut up. Don't get up. Stay away from that dance floor, man, because there aren't many of you that can move rather well. Most of you can't. And then they came up with these stupid dances back in the 80s and 90s and stuff, like the lawnmower, where you dance and you put your arms out like you're pushing a lawnmower. That's a dance move? What? Yeah, it's called the lawnmower. What? Yeah, there was a dance move called the sprinkler or something, where you would move in jerky motions in a 360-degree circular manner like you were a lawn sprinkler, and you do that to music. Nothing makes you look stupider than doing these things. The lawnmower, the lawn sprinkler. For some reason, dances started to take on a theme of landscaping. I don't know where that came from. We were doing these stupid dance moves. It all comes down to actually you're doing the douchebag is what it's called, because that's what you look like. And somehow when women do it, it looks okay. When men do it, disgusting. All right. We've got a guest coming up, and we'll be speaking to our guest momentarily. In the meantime, put some pants on, please. This is awkward.
Have you ever wondered how Ron Van Dam manages to sound so damn sexy podcast after podcast after podcast? It's simple. No pants. Ever. Pants are for suckers. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Pants-free podcasting at its finest.
Hey, Chris, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Chris has got a great publication out called I'm Just No Good at Rhyming and Other Nonsense for Mischievous Kids and Immature Grown-Ups, which is kind of everybody now that you've been grouped into this. Where did you get the idea to do this?
Well, you know, I've been a TV writer for close to 20 years now, mm-hmm. and I never really thought about writing for kids until I had kids of my own. And I think there's just something about, like, I don't know if it was it was a little bit of me saying, oh yeah, like seeing what my kids were going through and wanting to share with them the things that made me laugh and the things that made me think a little bit, and yeah. And probably just also a little bit of trying to impress them. there's been no shortage of people in TV though who've said that my writing's a little immature.
Well, so, you've written for some. You're quite prestigious. You're a writer and executive producer for How I Met Your Mother, and writer for The Late Show with David Letterman, which is classic. Your pieces have appeared everywhere, but I'm interested how you got into the poetry aspect of it.
It's funny. I started out, like I said, I had that. I wanted to do something for my kids. I started out. I'll write a novel. But one of them wasn't sleeping through the night, and so I really just couldn't keep anything in my head. Yeah. And so I turned to short form poetry, sort of out of necessity. But really, I've actually enjoyed it. I think my kids, and now I've seen other kids really get a kick out of the rhythm and the structure, and it's been a lot of fun.
Wow. Are you still doing the TV writing?
I am. I ran a show last year that didn't come back. It's called The Great Indoors, and now I'm developing new series right now. But right now, I get to talk about my book, which is the best because I'd rather talk about writing than write.
Well, that makes no sense. I'd rather talk about than write. That's interesting. I'd rather write about talking than talk. So,
I'd rather talk about something I've already done than actually do it.
is there humor in the book? Were you able to take your humor and put that aside, or is it injected?
Oh, it is. It is everywhere. Yeah. It's filled with it, and from the title poem, I'm just no good at rhyming, and it makes me feel so bad. I'm just no good at rhyming, and that's why I'm so blue. This was me sharing, like, here are things that made me laugh with my own kids, and here are things that we've all laughed at together. And some of them are based on real life events, and some of them are just silly things.
Matter of fact, it's hit the New York Times bestseller list already.
Yeah, it's. I'm my own worst critic. Some people don't take criticism well. I don't take compliments well. I'm mostly I'll be the first person to say, oh no, this part could have been better, this rhyme isn't, but so it's been a real delight and a challenge for me to see how much people have responded to it and enjoyed it.
That's the television writer in you. It's written.
Oh my gosh.
It's written, but we have to change it. But now we have to change it. And now we have to change it.
You know it well, yeah. But no, I love the response, and it's on a lot of best of the year lists, and the negative voices in my head are on the run, which is great. I'm sure they'll regroup and come back soon.
I'm sure they will. So at times you actually take established poems and you kind of throw them around a little bit and change them up.
Just a few most of the poems are straight up for the kids, but there are a few winks for the adults there. There's one called Two Roads, and the entire poem goes, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by. Yeah. Since then, I've been completely lost. Thanks for nothing, Robert Frost.
Yes.
And that's not as good as the original, but it might be more accurate in terms of at least what I've experienced. There's a little something for all ages in there. You know, the books I grew up with were ones that I remember I'd come back to a year later and find something totally new.
Yeah.
And I hope this book can be that kind of thing for kids.
You kind of remind me, in a way, and this is going to sound weird, of Soupy Sales, in the sense that he was promoted as a children's show, but adults were just as much into it.
I love that. I've gotten Shel Silverstein. I've gotten Ogden Nash. This is the first Soupy Sales that I've gotten, but I love that.
I think if Soupy were around, he'd be happy to hear that he was grouped into that. So it's available everywhere, I assume.
It is available everywhere, online, local bookstore. We've had, you know, for kids or grandkids, have definitely had the things that make me happy, or someone, you know, a friend telling me, oh, this was a reluctant reader, and then just started tearing through the book. And, you know, these are all inspired by things I loved. Shel Silverstein growing up, and Monty Python later on in life.
And, there you go.
And they're things that made me sit up and laugh and then wonder what I can do. And I hope kids do the same thing with this book, and they sit up and they laugh and they wonder what they can do.
You know, it's interesting. We got the promotional copy here, and it looks like a children's book. It takes on the actual guise of a children's book. And I'm not saying it's not, but I'm just saying it fits right into it.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right that there is, you know, hopefully some of those immature grown-ups that they mention on the title will also flip through it.
Well, I'm sure you'll bring them in. Yes, I have no doubt. Everybody has a website these days. Is there a place we can visit to see what's going on?
You know, Ron, I'm an old man.
Oh, come on now. Will you stop it?
I'm so behind the times.
Oh, my God.
I only just got out of my AOL account. So, I'm at Just Chris Harris on Twitter, and once I figure out what my password is, I'll do some things.
Until then,
absolutely get it online or go to your bookstore and I hope people check it out as a possible gift.
He can write books, write television shows, but he can't write a website. I don't know. I can't figure that out.
Yeah. TV and books, isn't that enough, Ron?
It's never enough. How the hell did you get out of AOL? I have not been successful in getting out of it because I'm scared that when I do, no one will be able to contact me ever again. How did you do that?
It took me about 6 hours one night to set up another email account, and then I just have it open. I didn't close it out.
Okay.
But every time I get one, I say, "Hey, I've got
all right."
You know, it's 15 years too late.
Yeah.
But here I've got a new email.
God.
Now that I'm on Gmail, I figure now everyone is probably moving on to something else.
Yeah.
So you're still
good with the Gmail, I think.
All right.
Okay.
For at least another 2 months.
The book is called "I'm Just No Good at Rhyming and Other Nonsense for Mischievous Kids and Immature Grown-ups," and it's a great book. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Ron. I had a great time.
And great.
I'm gonna work on that website.
Please, Chris Harris, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Bye
bye.
Beep 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 beep. Hey, thank you very much. We're just about out of time for today. I'm so sorry. I thought it would go on forever, but it's apparently not. But I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace. As a thank you to all of you for listening today, there'll be a little something special in the mail for you tomorrow. It'll be an invoice.